The bottom line in business talk. Voice America Business.
This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on the following show are solely those of the host, guest, and its callers. It's time for The Growth Strategist. Here is your host, Aldana Ambler.
Welcome to The Growth Strategist. I am Aldana Ambler, and each week we rotate through different growth strategies for mid-market companies. Most of our listeners are between $20 million and $200 million and have $1 billion in your sights. So one week we'll be talking about growing your business through franchising, and next week it might be IPOs, and next week it might be, say, geographic expansion, and you never quite know what we're going to be doing until we announce it. So I have been looking for somebody who has some expertise in the different channels of distribution, because there's some tough decisions that people need to make about whether or not you should be going direct or through reps or through wholesalers or distributors or franchisees or licensing or bundling. Tough decisions are needed to be made. And I have a guest today that I'm excited about, and so I want you to listen to not just what he's doing today, but the journey, because there's several positions that he's had, four or five different companies that he's been very, very successful in, and each have had a different way that they've gone to market, different way that even though it's all been IT-related, the tough decisions that they've had to make about how do you serve the customers and how do you make money, that's what we're going to be talking about today. So before we get into that, how do you make channel decisions, I want to foreshadow some of the upcoming shows because we have some other exciting ones. On November 7th, we have Ann Klein of Ann Klein & Associates. We're going to be talking about growing your businesses through strategic alliances. Now, several of you who have listened to me talk other weeks know that I favor joint ventures over strategic alliances. I've been in business for 35 years, launched other businesses off of my core business that started that long ago, and I've just seen so many people get in trouble with strategic alliances, I just can't tell you. Because people have one foot in the door and out the other and kind of half do them. And they're really too sloppy in most cases. And this gal knows how to do them. If you're in the Philadelphia area, there's just nobody she doesn't know. And she's figured out how to grow her public relations firm through this relationship building process. And it's leveraged for her clients and on behalf of her business. I want you to hear how she thinks and how she's developed it. And she's been in business a long time, like 25 years. You're going to have to listen to her and replay the show, because it isn't just, here's the steps of how you build a relationship. That's too superficial. I'm going to want you to listen to it a couple times, because there's subtleties about how, the handshake and how the relationships can stay a long period of time. These are relationships that are for life. And that's what's different. That's kind of what's wrong with a lot of other strategic alliances, is that they're such short-lived, what's in it for me, how do I kill them kind of mentality in some other situations. So I found somebody that I think is really fabulous at what she does. Their corporation is really good at crisis planning for corporations. They've helped the Union Carbide and some healthcare corporations. I mean, they're just really stellar at what they do. I want to have you listen to Ann Klein talk about growing your business through strategic alliances. On November 14th, you're going to listen to Michael Lacey of Digineer. They're an Inc. 500 corporation, and I'm asking him to talk about how do you sustain the rapid growth of a service firm through and I'm going to call it productization of services and kind of protecting the culture of a company. Now, that's not easy, particularly a service firm. They're the type that, have some of these service guys where the owner is kind of cool and everybody's loyal to them, and then it gets really fragile and it goes away. This guy's been able to protect the loyalty and the energy and the youthful exuberance of the business for quite a long time, and he's winning, the best boss awards, and it's not just an itty-bitty tiny little firm. So I want you to, again, both of these firms, both of these interviews are the type that I'd like you to listen to subtly, the subtleties of how they think, how they talk, the mentality that affects things. So those are two. I'm highlighting two of the ones coming up. We also have two other ones I'd like to highlight, maybe just one more. Cheryl Beth Kushler of CEO Think Tank is in December 19th. I'm going to be asking her to talk about the range of people that she's been working with in her CEO Think Tank. So, those are one of the groups that they have, an average of 6 to 9 people that are getting together on a periodic basis to be kind of an advisory board for each other. most of the time the people that do that don't have official boards of directors for their privately held companies, and this is their way to be kicked in the pants to do what you need to do without having a board of directors. This is a bright gal who really understands what the mid-market companies need to grow. And so this is three examples of people where it isn't just the content of what they're saying, it's the way they think. So again, that is the November 7th show, the November 14th show, and the December 19th. Now, before we get into the topic of distribution channels, I've gotten some responses to my show recently for the funniest thing. I am headquartered near Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. This is an international show. We're on the Internet. I got to tell you, I think more people are watching football now because of what we're doing here. We are attracting several thousand people listening to this every week, and I get calls and emails and from people in Australia and Brazil and China and Singapore about the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, even if you're not a football fan, I'm telling you, the relationship between how the Eagles play and how businesses run is just in your face. I cannot ignore it. And if you go back and you were to look at NFL film and you were to watch how these guys come onto the field at the first quarter, at the second quarter, at the third quarter, et cetera, I'll tell you, I can tell if they're going to do well that quarter just by how they come onto the field. And that is a matter of coaching. And when they get ahead and they get cocky, they don't win. They don't win. When they get a little bit ahead and they think, we're unbeatable. Nobody can do anything to us. We're just so wonderful. Well, it's just like some of the rapidly growing companies that are on the Inc. 500 that just start to coast and they forget the basics. Or when they start making mistakes and they start blaming somebody else. First it's the cold, then it's the heat, then it's because somebody else done them wrong, or then it's because the crowd didn't do something, or then it's because somebody distracted them, or then it's because they had injuries. It's so adolescent, it's amazing. They have the talent, they have the training, they know the plays, they even like each other. They're proud of what they're doing. They're having a hard time managing their energy, their emotions. And it's one of the key things that I've noticed. I've been specializing in companies that are wanting to be on the Inc. 500 of rapidly growing companies, or the ones that want to stay on that list. So the thought I want to give you is that managing and sustaining your emotions, managing your emotions, is one of the key ingredients to being a rapidly growing company. It's not enough to be smart. It's not enough to have bright people. It's not even enough to have, you know, all the procedures and all the nice technology. It's understanding emotional balance. And if you need the equivalent of having a therapist come in, if you need the equivalent of having a wake-up call or having, you know, an outward-bound experience or something to break you out of a self-destructive pattern, like for whatever reason is happening to such a stellar team as the Philadelphia Eagles, do it. Because having a slump, having a self-destructive, you know, I don't know what other word, a slump. That, you know, they are not winning when they really should be winning. This is a team that has no excuse. Shake it up. Do whatever you need to do to smack yourself up upside the head and pull yourself out of it. When everything is there and something key is missing, it's probably around the emotional element. Now, this is related to the distribution channel, believe it or not, because everybody knows the questions in distribution channels. It becomes complicated because people get invested in the answer. This is what I find happens. I find that companies know that there's a financial element. It's expensive in some cases to figure out how to bundle the products or whether or not you should be going into franchising or do it yourself or go through wholesalers, go through reps, do it through licensing. There's a financial consideration. There's the market preferences about, you know, how does your customer prefer to do business with you? But we know how to do that. We know how to interview people. We know how to, you know, talk to our customers and watch their behaviors. When do they buy from you? When do they complain? If there's a staff expertise issue, one of the key issues in making a channel decision is around whether or not the product is complicated and it needs to be done through the product, or if it's a staff expertise issue and you have to present your product through a channel that emphasizes staffing and service. And there's also an issue related to competition. Okay. Now, those are a lot of words that we all understand. And believe it or not, I find that a lot of channel decisions are not about the complexity of that puzzle that I just listed. I find it gets messed up around emotionality. People get invested in the answer. somebody comes in with a Jeopardy kind of a mentality of if the answer is, it must be licensing. They start promoting it and answering the question with and lobbying their management team with, I think we need to be doing this way, and this is what I think we should do. And they stomp down the hallway, and they have their PowerPoint slides, and they say, we do it this way or else. And I've seen some anger. And it's not a business proposal. It's not a dispassionate business proposal. It is a, you know, kind of a huff. I've seen people leave an organization over their emphatic determination that this has to be going through this channel and that's the only way we should do it. I've seen more anger and more adolescent behavior over distribution channel opinions than almost anything. So today's discussion, and the reason that I asked Andrew Frawley of Click Tactics to talk with us, is we're going to walk through this guy's history. You know, he's with. We're going to walk through what he did with Market Pulse, with Grant and Partners, with Exchange, and now with Click Tactics, and listen to the history of what he's been doing. He's been successful, and this is a very kind of calm, very bright kind of guy. What are some of the decisions in each situation? How did they decide? What is the best distribution channel for the products that they have? They're related, but they weren't the same decision each time. Now, Andrew, are you there?
I am, yes.
Hi, what do you think about my opinion that emotion sometimes kind of gets in the way of the decision to distribution channels?
Well, I think it is an emotional topic because, you know, first, it's so central to the success of the business, but I think, you know, it just intertwines into the fabric of everything from how you build product to how you build a sales culture to how you build, you know, a customer culture. And so it's easy to have strong opinions, and it's I would agree it's one of the sort of seminal questions businesses have to ask themselves at the beginning and kind of all the way through the process.
And it gets hot, doesn't it?
It does.
You know, if you hired somebody, you know, say to be a sales manager, and they have a philosophy and how they came in, they figure that you must be wanting them to do, you know, it their way. And so they start selling you on their ideas. So you could end up going down that route just because the assumption is that they're right.
Yep, absolutely. I think everybody's got their own model. And, mm-hmm. and what I've seen is that there's no one model for every company. It really has to be adapted.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many ways to go go to market. And then when the situation changes, can people be adaptive and modify how they were doing it? I've seen some people that have to change companies when the situation changes because they just can't adjust within one business and they have to go someplace else. You wouldn't have thought it would be that emotional, though.
No, I've seen the same thing. I think, you know, part of it is somebody who's good at managing an indirect channel and is very successful may not be good at managing a direct channel. And so
you've done a little bit of both, though, haven't you?
Yeah, well, I've seen the models run together, separately and together and side by side.
Well, this is going to be fun. So everybody, you're ready for the journey because this is fun. He's lived it. I want you to learn from the choices. Okay, now we're going to be right back after the break. We're going to follow his journey. Now listen to how some decisions are made. This is The Growth Strategist with Eldon Ambler. We'll be right back.
Listen wherever you are. 24-hour business and financial news. Solid, focused, and informed. The leader in business talk. Voice America Business at voiceamerica.com.
If you're a struggling business trying to get to the next plateau and would like to learn more about what Aldana can do for you, log on to thegrowthstrategist.com. Listen to some of our many satisfied clients.
We called in the Growth Strategist to do a strategic analysis of our company, design an organizational structure, and improve our management team. The important point is that Aldana Ambler gets it. Her extensive experience coaching fast-growth companies has really paid off for us.
Aldana played a key role in driving the rapid growth of our company. We now have a strategic growth plan in place, obtained growth financing, have a stronger management team, and expanded our services, and are already seeing profits. Companies dealing with business growth issues couldn't ask for a better or wiser business advisor than Aldana Ambler.
What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-ELDONA today and see where your business can go tomorrow. Once again, that number is 1-888-ALDONNA. TheGrowthStrategist.com. Achieving accelerated growth with sustained profitability.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The bottom line in business talk. Voice America Business.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll-free at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Aldana Ambler.
Come back to the program. This is The Growth Strategist, Aldana Ambler, and today I'm interviewing Andrew Frawley. Now, is it Andrew or Andy?
Andy's fine.
Okay. Well, I just, you know, I haven't met you. I've heard about you, and I've enjoyed our rehearsal, but so I just wanted to make sure I call you what you prefer to be called. You are currently the CEO of Click Tactics, but you have a really neat background. Let's do a little bit of an advertising pitch for what Click Tactics does. Leading multi-channel marketing services provider for global 2,000 companies. What do you really do? What does that mean?
Well, basically we take the hottest sort of direct marketing programs that typically the banks or telecommunication companies or travel and hospitality companies do, and we outsource them. We provide a full service relationship, so we outsource those programs. And through our technology platform, we're able to transform them from sort of big, monolithic, episodic sort of communication programs that you know, all of us as consumers have felt when we open the mailbox and get the sort of, you know, piece of direct mail that says, you know, why would anybody send me this, or an email that looks like spam, and try to migrate those marketing dollars to a way that's spent with the highest degree of relevance. And to us, that means communicating when people want to be communicated with, saying something that they want to hear or they'd be interested in or provides informational content, and then doing it in the channel, whether it's direct mail, email, telemarketing, web content, that is either preference-based or most appropriate. And while that may sound like a brilliant statement of the obvious, and people would hope that everybody does it that way, the reality is it's quite challenging. And
it's very complicated it's contentious.
It is. So we've had a great run over the last two or three years, and creating great value for our clients.
Do you see yourself as an IT business or a marketing business?
We see ourselves as a marketing business, big technology enablement, but we're here to deliver value for our clients.
That wasn't a trick question, was it?
No,
because I think that's one of the issues with you and your competitors is how do they view themselves mentally, you know, and that affects their channel decisions, I think.
It does. You know, we start from a standpoint of, you know, we get up every morning to deliver outcomes for our clients, and the fact we have technology lets us do that is an important part of our business, but it's not the reason we come to work.
Okay. Now, we got to do a little bit of tracking to get you to this point, because that's a different role for you. You know, this marketing exec and, you know, having big banks buying kind of services from you. They're not buying software from you, right? They're buying professional services?
They're buying a managed service.
Yeah, what do they buy? I mean, do they buy software? Do they buy consulting? What do they buy?
They buy communications to their clients. So they buy more effective email, direct mail, phone calls.
But ultimately, they
buy an outcome. They buy, you know, more retained customers, more cross-sold customers.
So that's what your contract actually sells. They actually buy so many more dollars of customers, or so many more.
Sometimes it's purely success fee based, and sometimes it's more transactional based. But ultimately, that's what we're working towards.
And so behind that might be access to some software, some equipment, or some database, and access to some consulting time. I mean, what's behind the screen?
There's a big technology platform that integrates the sort of supplier chain together for more efficient execution, and then it's consulting and, you know, kind of tool-based consulting that helps people design and execute, and very importantly, measure the program so you can be in a continual learning environment. And so a lot of our IP is around both how to design a more effective program, but how to measure it quickly so you can continue to adapt it and get better and better, you know, faster and faster.
Now, how is that different from what your competitors do? What I'm going to do is I'm starting with what you're doing now. You have a, talk about distribution channel. You know, you have a lot of competitors. How is it different?
We do, and...
You know, what did you just say that's different from what they do?
Well, the primary difference, and it is somewhat subtle, is that we're here to manage a full campaign, as you said. Mm-hmm. And so we'll do the strategy, we'll work on the creative, we'll manage the execution, we'll help measure it, we'll come back with recommendations on how to improve it. And we're a one-stop shop, and we do it for things that are complex, the things that are challenging for companies to do, even big companies like a Bank of America, who's one of our clients.
Cool.
The alternative for many situations is for a client to contract with five or six different companies to deliver the services.
Now, you knew that was my next question, is give me the other version.
I did.
You know, what's the alternative for a customer? If somebody chose another channel alternative, what does it look like?
Well, typically, you know, they would, you know, hire three or four or five or six different, you know, vendors or companies, you know, one to do provide creative services and one to do data management and one to do analytics and a printer to print things and an e-marketing company to do e-marketing. And there's, you know, at least from our vantage point, there's two problems with that. One is it's very complex to manage, and in an environment where over the last 4 or 5 years, marketing staffs at big companies have actually shrunk. It's challenging for a single, you know, mid-level marketing manager to manage all those vendors. But second, and probably more importantly, the time and complexity of managing it actually creates a barrier. That every time that, you know, somebody comes up with a great strategy or a brilliant analytic approach that says, boy, we'd like to communicate, you know, nightly instead of monthly, and we'd like to send, you know, 1,000 versions of the letters instead of 5 versions of the letters, that complexity in that multi-vendor environment actually becomes either, for time reasons or cost reasons, prohibitive. And and unfortunately, what a lot of companies do is they end up going back to doing what they've always done, and they don't get that improvement.
Yeah. Oh, the marketing coordinator job, or whatever you want to call it, in a company now is a nightmare.
It is. It's
a nightmare. I mean, we're a much smaller company than Bank of America, obviously. But dealing with the different people with our website and with the radio program promotion and the different kinds of writers, and, you know, that role is difficult. It really is. And, you know, in the expectations of blogs and just the complexity of marketing. Now, if you don't mind, go into the inside workings of your business. Who discovered this? Tell me the process of how do you get to the point where you decided you were going to be this one-stop shop. It didn't just happen.
No, it didn't. It's, I mean, Quick Tactics is a company that actually has been around since 99, and it was a venture-backed company in the late 90s. And like a lot of companies at that time, was aggressively capitalized. They raised a lot of money, and the original idea was actually to provide, it was very different, it was to provide a marketing service for the small business marketplace.
Oh,
so
wow.
The original idea was that if you were, you know, owned a dry cleaner, or you're an undertaker, or you owned a gas station, and you wanted to communicate with customers or prospective customers, you could, you know, go to this website, buy some data, upload your own customer database, buy pre-built creative templates, push the button, and have email and direct mail come out the back end.
man, did it morph.
And
wow.
It did morph. So it was a good idea. They built a lot of technology to go after the idea. However, to your channel question, this is a dramatic example in a dramatic period of time. But they made a decision.
Now,
this is prior to me being involved. But
who's they?
They was the prior management team before I came in, and that the way to distribute this small business marketing service was to go to third parties, to partners who had a lot of small business clients. And so they would go, for example, to a well-known office supply chain who certainly does have a lot of small business clients, and they did a cooperative marketing agreement with them where they, you know, co-branded websites and had in-store displays and all the sort of traditional things you might see in a relationship like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was literally, they built it and virtually nobody came. And the reason was that the consumers, or in this case the small business owners, didn't think of going to this office supply store to do direct mail.
Right.
They thought about going there to buy a computer or to buy paper or to buy ink.
Right.
If they needed to do direct mail or email, they went and, you know, went down to the corner print shop or to a Kinko's, et cetera.
And if they thought of them, they wouldn't trust it. They wouldn't think that they would know it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the whole going to the internet to do something like that was a very foreign thing, particularly
so,
in, you know, 99, 2000.
Go in the management team or the, you know, the boardroom or whatever, and tell us how the decision to transform this business from what it was to what it is. How'd that happen?
Well, you know, it happened, you know, somewhat gradually, I guess. Again, prior to me being involved, there was some initial forays.
Mm-hmm.
They had the fortunate fact that they had a big vision initially, and so all the technology they built to support that vision was built towards an eye towards scale, to managing lots of data and driving lots of volume. So they had a technology platform that could be applied, at least from a scale standpoint, to the problems you'd see in a
mm-hmm.
top 10 bank. You know, I got involved in 2003.
How did you get involved? Because it sounds like it was on a different track.
It was on a different track. I got involved through the principal investor, which is a private equity firm.
Okay.
And I had been doing some work with them looking at next generation marketing services companies, and had built some
mm-hmm.
Hypothesis or a thesis around whether you could have a disruptive, you know, product and service. And a piece of that was focusing on the execution, as you said earlier, focusing on that marketing coordinator job. And what we'd seen, and a lot of my background embedded in helping companies build the big data warehouse or the big customer database and to have really sophisticated analytics and predictive models.
See, that's a channel discussion.
It is, yeah.
That's a channel discussion. You know, that whole question you just said is a channel question.
It is.
Wow.
And so, you know, we looked at this execution part of the problem and where the pain was and saw an opportunity to morph the capability that had been built, albeit for a different reason, towards the enterprise problem.
So you got sucked in and they saw a solution and it morphed the business and wow.
I started helping and mm-hmm. then I was the interim CEO and then I ended up being the full-time CEO.
Now, has the approach stayed basically the same since you became CEO?
Yeah, it has. You know, we made a fundamental, again, distribution decision in 2003 that I think has been the thing that's driven our success in the most material fashion. And the decision was, you know, what is it we're selling and how do we go to market?
Yeah, gotcha. And you're selling not just a product, you're selling that result. Okay,
well,
now we're
going
to come back to this. This is going to be an interesting interview. We're going to do backwards. It's okay. We're going to be right back. This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. We're going to be right back with our interview with Andrew Frawley.
Fresh, dynamic, and totally prepared for continuing business education. Business Talk Radio. Voice America Business at voiceamerica.com.
If you're a struggling business trying to get to the next plateau and would like to learn more about what Aldana can do for you, log on to thegrowthstrategist.com. Listen to some of our many satisfied clients.
We called in the Growth Strategist to do a strategic analysis of our company, design an organizational structure, and improve our management team. The important point is that Aldana Ambler gets it. Her extensive experience coaching fast growth companies has really paid off for us.
Aldana played a key role in driving the rapid growth of our company. We now have a strategic growth plan in place, obtained growth financing, have a stronger management team, and expanded our services, and are already seeing profits. Companies dealing with business growth issues couldn't ask for a better or wiser business advisor than Aldana Ambler.
What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-ALDONA today and see where your business can go tomorrow. Once again, that number is 1-888-ALDONNA. TheGrowthStrategist.com. Achieving accelerated growth with sustained profitability.
If suddenly you're numb or weak on one side, limb, or face,
it could be a stroke. Get help. Don't wait.
Maybe it's a loved one suddenly slurring their speech or dizzy.
Call 911 and get medical help quickly.
Blacks have a higher occurrence. Do you want to know more?
Call 1-888-4-STROKE or visit www.strokeassociation.org. Time lost is brain lost.
A public service message brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business. This is Voice America Business.
you're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll-free at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Aldana Ambler.
Welcome back to the show. This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler, and today I'm interviewing Andy Frawley of Click Tactics. Now, that's not his only identity. This guy's had four or five jobs here where his primary role has been, in addition to being this expert in things like analytical CRM, data warehousing, application deployment strategies, customer value management, blah, blah, blah. You know, he's got the master's in business administration from Babson and holds a bachelor's in science degree with honors from the University of Maine. But he's got all those credentials. But as a CEO, one of the key things that I hear in Andy's background is that he's been able to read the market dynamics and pick out what's the best way to go to market. So the current situation is, at Click Tactics, you've said, okay, now we're going to look primarily at the financial institutions. Those are your primary niche?
Well, when we started, it was with a, you know, we were a small company and we needed focus. And so I had quite a bit of background in retail financial services. And so we started with a list of 20 banks and 20 insurance companies.
That's a good idea. So you see the dynamics of how they, what they struggle with, where they're feeling clumsy, and you leverage your expertise in IT, you leverage your expertise in marketing as a group, not just you, and it comes to market in a way that answers some of their pain points. Some of their frustration of the clumsiness of the role of marketing coordinator, the clumsiness of dealing with multiple vendors, the clumsiness of not getting the results they want, the clumsiness of the cost. And that's what you're selling, is fixing that, the cumbersomeness of the process, right? So that's why they would come to you. Now, that's what you observe. That's kind of the process of your thinking. Now, before that, before you went there, you were with a place called Exchange, correct?
Yes.
Or did I skip something? I skipped that $1.2 billion private equity fund process.
No, that was, yeah, that was when I was trying to find myself for my next job.
Okay, so I'll skip that?
Yep.
Okay, so at Exchange, what were you doing there?
Well, I was the CEO and the founder, so
and
Exchange.
And what did Exchange
It was an enterprise software company that provided marketing automation tools. So tools to help, again, typically kind of Fortune 2000 companies do better, you know, manage their customers better, understand who the customers were, do analytics around what they buy today and what they might buy tomorrow, and then, you know, start to design strategies that would be able to change their behavior.
Okay, now let's be specific. The things I know is that while you were with them, they grew revenue more than 130%. And we're one of the fastest-growing companies in New England in 2000. You expanded the company's product line through internal innovation and three acquisitions. And in 1998, you led the company through a successful IPO and delivered eight consecutive profitable quarters as a public company, resulting in a peak market capitalization of over $2 billion. So you were kind of successful with Exchange, huh?
Yeah, we had a great run.
Yeah, okay. So everybody gets that you knew what you were doing. Now, let's go to the channel decision. Tell me again. How did you go to market? We know it's an IT company.
This was a software company, mm-hmm. And we had a couple different strategies. You know, we started, you know, in, I'm a pretty big believer in companies like that the first 5 to 10 sales you have to go hunt and kill on your own, and so that's, you know, very much a direct sales model.
Did they buy the software? Did they lease the software?
They bought the software. It was, you know, enterprise, you know, kind of license, a software licensing model where we'd sell it to them and they'd install it on their own hardware, and then we'd support it.
And did they have to buy upgrades from you every year?
You know, they bought maintenance that included upgrades typically.
So they had a maintenance contract?
Yep, they signed annual maintenance contracts.
And your money was made from the maintenance, or was it made from the licensing?
Now, in that business, your money is made from the license sales. So we sold software licenses. We did provide professional services. And then, you know, generally you charge 20% of the license fee in annual maintenance. So it's a nice recurring revenue stream. But the only way to drive growth in those businesses is by selling an increasing number of new licenses every quarter.
Okay. So now why would somebody buy from Exchange? What was the competitive advantage? Why buy your software?
Well, we very much had a first mover advantage when we started, so we invented this category. So nobody had ever seen a piece of software like we had. And we built it in a way from a technical standpoint that, and this was in 1995 when we were making these decisions, but that it operated against what in the IT world is called a data warehouse, which conceptually is just a warehouse of all the data a company might have, a collection of all the data. And we built it to operate against a kind of a next generation set of data warehousing technology that the big IT companies like IBM and NCR were kind of bringing to market, and so we were able to kind of ride a wave of demand they were creating.
See, what you're doing now is selling results, and you've linked it to consulting services, and you're not selling software, right?
That's right.
So now what's so different? Why sell software back then and not now?
Well, I think there's two answers. One is the state of technology. I mean, we use – our clients today have things – like the products we had at Exchange and we're delivering back in 95. So they're a necessary part of the sort of capability set. In many ways today, we're adding that sort of last mile, and it's, you know, we see it as the last mile of services that delivers the most value. But in 95, you know, there was a more remedial need. People needed the data. They needed some basic tools to kind of analyze and manage the data. And I think it was also from just a market standpoint, an environment where, you know, big companies bought a lot of software.
I mean,
that's
they
how they thought about it.
And now, would you want to be a hundreds. Company selling and leasing software now? Because there still are companies out there doing that.
There are. I would not want to be for two reasons. One is, commercially, it's much harder to distribute software in a sort of licensing agreement. People, the companies bought so much of it in the 90s. Much of it ill-advised in hindsight. And so the bar is much higher as a vendor to prove that if you're going to go ask somebody to spend $1 million kind of in a one-time upfront fee in their software, that it's actually going to deliver something.
The Especially second, with open in source more, available out there.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the second, and I think at least in the sector we're in, almost more important piece is that in our business today, we're 100% aligned with what our clients, with our client success. If our programs, if the programs we do for a client aren't successful, then we don't get any more revenue. And that's a much healthier way to run a business than kind of selling a big piece of software that could conceptually enable a company to do something, but not actually being accountable for the outcome.
So what if a company wanted to have a long run, okay? Because this is sounding like Exchange had a good short run. You know, you could ride that wave for a while, and then, okay, you have to get off that wave and go off and do click tactics and now have market results for banks. What if you wanted to be a 20-year company?
In the software space?
Yeah, like what if what if you wanted to stay with Exchange and...
Well, I think it's a great question, and there's very few big software companies. Mm-hmm. You can count them on one hand these days. Mm-hmm. And you know, basically, what you've seen is that the way those companies, particularly the public software companies, continue to get the growth that they need to have Wall Street be supportive is, you know, there's a tremendous amount of M&A activity. So you either have to eat or be eaten, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Talk about a distribution channel. They ride the wave for a while and then sell.
Right. And, you know, and you create a lot of your value is created by knowing when to sell. And that's what we did at Exchange. Ultimately, it was sold to one of the larger companies.
One of the concerns I have about that is that there's so many people that figure they're all going to be purchased by the big guys, and it's like one out of every, I don't know what it is, 20, 25, actually gets purchased, and the rest really lose.
Yeah, it's an enormous issue in the software space right now that, you know, again, because of this consolidation, the number of strategic buyers is a fraction of what it was, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. And, you know, I know so many people who have got the next best, you know, technology, you know, XML, whatever it is thing. And you talk to five people in that space, and they all think they're going to sell themselves to Microsoft. And the reality is Microsoft might buy one of them if they're really good.
Well, you think the proportion is, it's, you know, I'm guessing, is it more like 1 out of 100 or 1 out of 25 that's actually going to make it?
Yeah, I think, you know, the statistics I hear is in a category where you might have, you know, 20 to 30 sort of early-stage venture-backed companies, you know, one will get sold very successfully, two will get sold, moderately successfully, and everybody else will have a bad outcome.
Mm-hmm.
So the stakes are quite high.
Mm-hmm. Now, you did direct and indirect channels when you're with Exchange. What are you talking about?
Yeah, well, at Exchange, we so as I said, you know, I think the first several clients you have to kind of go get on your own and make sure everything works and you understand the market dynamic. At Exchange, the thing that probably really kind of catapulted us into a high growth environment and really helped to enable us to go public was that we got very focused on an indirect set of channels that provided products or services that were adjacent to what we were doing, and we were fortunate that we had, you know, several different categories that fell into that description, and had a variety of everything from sort of OEM relationships where they kind of embedded our software, you know, through value-added reseller relationships, through, you know, looser sort of strategic relationships.
Yeah.
But we're able to build, you know, it up so that, you know, 20 or 30% of our business was coming, you know, outside of our direct sales force. Now, we maintain a direct sales force as well. So we ran both models side by side.
Gotcha. Now, before you were with Exchange, I know this sounds funny going backwards, but one of the reasons I'm doing this, I've noticed that an awful lot of the models, particularly related to distribution channels, are becoming more similar to where they were in the early 90s and the late 80s now.
Mm-hmm.
And more and more people's choices, because it's not the dot-com bubble and all that kind of stuff. Founding partner of Grant & Partners, management consulting firm, implemented customer-focused business strategy, et cetera. In what time frame?
This was in 92 to 95.
Okay, and what kind of distribution channel did you use there?
This is a management consulting company that again was thematically in the same area of helping companies manage customer information, you know, better, more effectively, more profitably,
mm-hmm.
Through targeted, you know, strategies.
You did a niche.
Yep.
And it was selling time.
We built a bunch of we had a bunch of intellectual property. We did some kind of IP licensing, but it was predominantly this was a people business.
Okay. And before that with Market Pulse, Division of Computer Corporation of America, database management software provider. Tell me about the distribution channel that involved there.
So at Market Pulse, this was the first startup I did in this area, and so it was, mm-hmm. From a capability standpoint, very similar to the software we built at Exchange.
Mm-hmm.
But built in sort of a old line mainframe environment that was common in the 80s.
Yeah, but you learned a lot there. Wasn't that your first big job out of school?
Yeah, the great thing there is I got to kind of do a startup as a division of a bigger company. So I got mm-hmm. a lot of the positive experience of a startup, but I had all these really smart people who actually knew what they were doing sitting around.
That was a gift in your life, huh?
It was, you know, the things you can't plan, but uh-huh. would never have asked for, but turned out to be very good.
Yeah, you ended up being a senior, senior level positions, including vice president of sales, vice president of development, and vice president of operations. I mean, you learned a lot when you were there. Now,
yeah,
when you
I
think back, I know this is a long time ago. That's like, what, 20 years ago or more?
Yeah, 15 years ago, yeah.
Gosh, excuse me, I'm not trying to make
almost,
you.
Almost, you're right, almost 20 years ago.
20 years ago. Okay, when you think back about the decisions and what people were fighting about, I mean, they had to be fighting. What'd they fight about? Okay, now think about that for a minute. Now, wait a minute. My theme music's going on here.
Okay.
Think about what they were fighting about. I know this sounds funny. What were they fighting about back there in the company that probably still doesn't even exist 20 years ago? Because that's what they're fighting about today in some companies. We're going to be right back with Andy Frawley. This is a growth strategist with Aldana Ambler.
Business information you need, from the stock market to starting and managing your business. Voice America Business at voiceamerica.com.
If you're a struggling business trying to get to the next plateau and would like to learn more about what Aldana can do for you, log on to thegrowthstrategist.com. Listen to some of our many satisfied clients.
We called in the growth strategist to do a strategic analysis of our company, design an organizational structure, and improve our management team. The important point is that Aldana Ambler gets it. Her extensive experience coaching fast growth companies has really paid off for us.
Aldana played a key role in driving the rapid growth of our company. We now have a strategic growth plan in place, obtained growth financing, have a stronger management team, and expanded our services, and are already seeing profits. Companies dealing with business growth issues couldn't ask for a better or wiser business advisor than Aldana Ambler.
What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-ALDONA today and see where your business can go tomorrow. Once again, that number is 1-888-ALDONNA. TheGrowthStrategist.com. Achieving accelerated growth with sustained profitability.
Bleeding profits, rupturing customer service. These business diseases can not only cripple a company, but kill it. On Business Diseases, Cure Them or Die with Dr. Tom Rogers and Jim Velas, these symptoms of a sick business are exposed, diagnosed, and effective treatments and vaccinations are offered. Tune in to Business Diseases, Cure Them or Die, every Thursday at noon Pacific on Voice America Business to eliminate diseases contaminating your business and promote healthy, profitable growth.
Are you feeling slammed and suckered in today's stock market? If so, then you need to tune in to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, Jordan Kimmel will train you in what you can do to beat up the big boys on Wall Street, as well as share his secrets to success so that you can buy and sell like a profit-pumping pro. Grab the bull market by the horns and listen to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
The Bottom Line in Business Talk. Voice America Business.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll free at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Aldana Ambler.
Back to the program. This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. And before I ask Andy Frawley to tell me about 1990, I would like him to give some contact information. Andy, where can people reach you?
Best way to get a hold of me is through email, and my email address is afrawley, A-F-R-A-W-L-E-Y, at clicktactics, all one word, .com.
Okay. And you're located in Boston, right?
Yes.
In the United States. I have to say that because, you know, it's an internet show and everybody needs to know where you're at. And I'm easy to get if you know my name. It's Aldana at Ambler.com. The website is www.thegrowthstrategist.com. And it's the toll-free number is 1-888-ALDONA. Now, the reason I'm asking Angie to think back about, like, the 1990 time frame, and I know it sounds ludicrous, I am honestly noticing the comparison between right now and about that time frame. I'm seeing the similar kind of decisions the companies are making, similar kind of arguments in the boardrooms. The technology is different, yeah. But the kinds of situations that people are facing with the economy, the agitation with politics, the agitation with some leadership, the kinds of patterns with the workforce, very, very similar. And so the arguments that they're having around the boardroom and the distrust and the lack of brand loyalty, all that kind of stuff, is very similar. So what were they arguing about when you were, if you remember, kind of put yourself back at Market Pulse days and Computer Corporation of America without doing any kind of proprietary secretive stuff? What was it like? What were you arguing about?
Well, I think, you know, there are two big things that we argued about, and I would agree, we're still arguing about them. One was, you know, what's the right technology to build our, you know, product or service off of, and that's, you know, a combination of what's the market going to accept and how can we be efficient. And the second is, you know, how do you sell it? I mean, and I use sell in the sort of, you know, broadest sense to include all the distribution channels, but, you know, early-stage companies or mid-stage companies, you know, they start and end with effective distribution, and both of those issues, the technology and the distribution, have lots of fact-based arguments, but they're also highly emotive. People get attached to their own idea and to their own technology, and it doesn't matter, right, wrong, or indifferent, they'll argue it right into the ground.
And a lot more stubbornness, especially in the mid-market. I'm seeing some people hanging on to things that they shouldn't hang on to. They're hanging on to some employees that might not work, and hanging on to products that are killing their profitability, hanging on to some technology decisions that, you know, might not have made sense, and there's some loyalty issues that have to be looked at. So, you know, the arguments around channels are tough. So the sales cycle is getting harder, where you have to go back again to find out, you know, is your premise right?
Well, and I think, you know, it's interesting to compare the economy now and the sort of political environment now to the mid and late 80s. But I think certainly when you're out, like I spend still a lot of my time out working with clients and prospective clients trying to get them to buy your service, it's quite similar in a lot of ways. I think, you know, the bar is high right now. People are, as I said earlier, I think we went through a period in the 90s that while it was exciting and fun, the bar was low. You know, companies would buy anything from anything, anybody that sounded interesting. And now you have to have a great offering, and you have to have a high quality company, and you've got to have good people who can deliver it. And that's how it was, you know, in the 80s as well. And so being able to equate what you're doing to value becomes the predominant, you know, part of the distribution challenge. Whether, and again, if you're selling it yourself with an own direct sales force, you have one set of challenges. That you get a whole different set if you're using partners, and you know, how do they describe value, and how do they add value to your value? And I think, you know, that's where I think the distribution conversation gets really interesting. And is, you know, how can you find a network of people to help grow your business? Where whatever they're bringing, you know, that it's a 1+1=3. That if partner A working with you can deliver, you know, 3x the value instead of 2x the value. In my experience, those are the relationships that actually produce results, both for the companies and for the clients.
And a number of my clients are having to bring in outside market researchers because they don't dare go back to their customers and say, are we on the right track? Is our premise right? Because then they look like they don't know what they're doing. But if they could have an outside researcher coming in and looking at the trends and the future needs of the companies, then they look bright, that they look like they've, you know, seen some new things that are coming in, and then they demonstrate that they've listened to it. So that's a real important thing. So, all right, so let's shine up the crystal ball. Tell me where Click Tactics and you are headed. Because you're a bright guy. You've been ahead of the curve here 5 times. Where are you headed?
Well, you know, I think we feel great about our company and our value proposition and the results we can deliver. So we're in the stage of the growth process where it's about continuing the execution. So we think we've answered the biggest problem, which is, do we have something that people want to buy? And generally we do a pretty good job at delivering it. We need, you know, several more years of growing this company at the sort of, you know, north of 50% a year rate that we've been doing.
Right now you're at about 28 value. Million run rate. Am I remembering
yes.
it right?
That's about right.
That's a pretty decent size. How big are you going to get?
It's a fun size.
How big are you going to get?
I think north of 100 million.
Okay. And then what?
Well, yeah, I think we have institutional investors, so you know, there'll be a liquidity event of some sort. And whether that's an IPO, whether that's selling to a strategic, or, you know, recapping it and bringing in a different, you know, set of institutional investors, which is, you know, of course, very trendy these days, those will probably all be options that we'll consider.
Hey, keep me in mind, when you start getting itchy and you start thinking about, like, your sixth company, you keep me in mind. I want to talk with you about
that.
I'd be on your board because I'm serious. I watch for bright people, and I participate. I've had over 800 clients, and I know talent when I hear it. So I'd be interested in, you know, what you're seeing in the marketplace. What are some of the agitations? What are some of the market things that you're seeing in your customers beyond what you currently do? Are you hearing any complaints?
Well, you know, I think, again, our vantage point is when we're working with clients is, you know, what's going on in their customer base. And,
right.
and again, we start with the basic premise that, you know, all the money in a business comes from customers. And and so those customer relationships should be managed. And, again, we focus on it more from the marketing standpoint, which is one piece of it. But, you know, I think there's a reality in today's world that customer relationships are much more fragile than they used to be.
Yeah.
And that's partially because all of us live in a fast-paced world where we are moving and changing.
Yeah.
Part of it's because I think in aggregate, service has gone down over the last 4 or 5 years.
And you'd think it would have gotten better, wouldn't you?
You would think, but I think, you know, there's lots of cost-cutting and so it's this environment where, particularly in the sort of a lot of the service-related industries, like financial services, that, you know, the switching, the barriers to switching and changing a relationship are actually quite low. And so, you know, trying to...
Now, listeners, when you hear this, Andy's probably going to have another thing that he's going to do to help customers manage that fragile customer relationship. You watch. You just watch this guy. Thank you for being on the program. You've been excellent. My wish for you at this day, as it is every week, is for accelerated growth with sustained profitability. This is the growth strategist, Aldana Ambler, signing out.
Voice America Business would like to thank you for logging on and tuning into the Growth Strategist. Join us each Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time for another exciting episode of the Growth Strategist, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.